Good morning, everyone. Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ, Blessed Master, saints and sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles, and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only king. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Article that I recently wrote, or writing, maybe perhaps not an article. At the heart of Hindu yoga thought is a monotheism. God and goddesses abound in great number in Sanatan Dharma. Yet the stated implied fact is that God is one and is ever the backdrop for every image and story. To the subtle mind, this is obvious. To all others, there is unending variety. This is a perfect reflection of creation itself. One may become enamored of nature's multiplicity, unencompassed, and be ignorant of God's oneness. Such realization is not for fools, the shallow or dull-witted. Nevertheless, divine unity is a fact. The world is God, proclaim the realized masters of India. All creation is a manifestation of beginningless, endless, formless spirit. There can be no greater monotheism than the gaining of this universal vision, in which God is known to be the sole causative factor and beyond creation's dual nature. It is interesting to note that many of the great world's religions that pride themselves on being monotheists actually fall far short of this lofty aspiration. A sense of tribalism, us versus them, member and non-member, pervades the thinking of those who proudly proclaim their monotheistic stance. For monotheism to have any truth, it must be thought through to its natural conclusion. There is but one God, one creative intelligence, and one force, one universal substance of which everything that exists has its source and substance. Not only the mental acceptance of this universal vision is needed, but the direct realization of this great truth is the ultimate conclusion. The gauntlet of spiritual challenge has been issued by realized prophets, saints, and spiritual masters for millennia. Yet spiritual cowardice covers up this universal vision through lesser philosophies, as well as organizations and institutions' ruse and rank materialism. Arise, awake, proclaim the scriptures and great saints. Forsake the sleep of ignorance that obscures the universal vision, this true monotheism. Shaming pale versions of monotheistic dogmas into oblivion, this shining vision sees God scintillating behind every person, flower, and atom. O valiant aspirants, arise, awake. As it says here, there are many who pride themselves on a monotheistic point of view and yet find themselves encumbered in small-mindedness, and whether you're a member of my church or not a member of my church, as to whether you're saved or not, or whether you're part of my religion, and if you're not, then you're not going to make it. I read a fascinating book on the life of David based on the biblical scriptures as this author understood it. And he said something that was amazing to me based on his reading of the Bible, and that was that David's initial understanding, and many of the people at that time, that the one true God that is spoken of in the Jewish tradition was the one true God for the nation of Israel. That there were other gods, but it was the one true God. And that when David was forced to leave this tribe of Israel, he thought at the time that this would cut off his connection with God, because he would no longer be with his people, but he would be with the foreign people. And that it was circumscribed by the geography of what Israel was. And I thought, what an interesting notion, that if he left that particular area, then he would be cut off from his God. And of course, as he was forced to leave and he went out and he was grieving greatly because he thought he would no longer be in communion with God. And of course, when he went outside the precincts of his own tribe, he found that he was still able to inwardly commune with God. And it came as a great astonishment to him at the time. And of course, through that experience, then his vision grew beyond the geographic or the tribal confines as to what influence his God has, and it universalized his vision more. And I think this is a great metaphor for what we go through in our own consciousness, that the human ego's mind, its tendency is to circumscribe, is to apply a word, a parenthesis in eternity, and say, all right, within this parenthesis, I understand this. But outside of this parenthesis, I don't really have a sense for what is true. So you'll find that there are those people, in order to comfort themselves, and in order to be able to relate to a God that they can understand, they create a certain circumference around that notion of God. They create a definition around that, an understanding, a feeling for it. And that's what they then ascribe as God. And that through the conscious evolution of the mind, we gradually expand our notion of what God is. And of course, as I've said many times, I find that there are many people, most people, who are in a running argument with God about how he runs his universe. And it's according to their own understanding of the nature of justice, of the nature of truth, of the notion of what is reality, with a capital R. And so people battle and they struggle. They become angry with God. They become restless. They think that they know more than divine intelligence knows. And of course, what they're fighting with oftentimes is a false image of the divine. But they don't really accept that. They really think that what they're arguing with is the true nature of God. And as we grow in consciousness, and as we grow through our own spiritual development, our understanding of God begins to refine itself. Not through mere intellectual study or study of historical texts, but through the evolution of consciousness, that the brain itself begins to change, that our intuition begins to develop to a greater degree. Now, there are those people who say that they are inspired by God himself through the direct communion with God. And that is so, for God reveals himself unto the individual within them. But it can be a very uneven road. There can be times of inspiration, and then there are times when you are pulled down into delusion. And if you are not very careful about the way that you conduct yourself, you can be ascribing false notions about God, thinking that you've been inspired from on high, when in reality you've diluted that direct inspiration that you've had with some lesser ideas and ideals. So in order to be true to our path, we have to be very good spiritual scientists. We have to test each spirit as it comes. We have to be willing to hold up every idea and every ideal that we feel has come from God into the light, into the openness, and see how it stands up to time. We live in an interesting time because we've gone through a huge sociological change. Through much of the Kali Yuga, there was an institution of church and state. And through these institutions, morals and structure were defined by the higher authorities, and then everybody else was expected to follow along. And if you didn't, oftentimes there were severe consequences to this. And there are still many places in the world today where this is true. And it keeps a kind of order about things. But through the sociological explosion and change that we've gone through, we've broken out of those old structures. There's no longer penalty of death or stoning or legal consequences, usually, that are associated with breaking the covenants of God. Rather, it's left to each individual to guide his life according to his own desire. And what we see is that people guide their lives according to how their body drives them, the old habits, the old instincts. And this can sometimes make a mess of things. And yet it's all done in the name of freedom and the desire to do what the individual wants to do. And so we see a great upsetting of traditional values and morals as those things are tossed out. Well, how is that relevant? How is that true to me? So ask the individual. And oftentimes there's no solid answer given to that. But through these experiences of trial and error, collectively and individually, we are going through a time when we are sorting out the wheat from the chaff and finding out what is that golden kernel of truth versus all the other kind of stories, all the kind of morals, all the kinds of ideas that go along that are not true and do not hold up over time. But in the meantime, there's a great upsetting of the balance of life, the balance of family, the balance of virtue and morals. And many times things are stood on their head so that good is seen as bad, and bad is seen as noble and virtuous. Of course, there's a great deal of fallout. But as Papa assures us that the more pain that is created in this world, it eventually resolves itself into goodness. Because the pain drives us toward wisdom. The thing is, who wants to be drugged through that door through painful circumstances? Wouldn't it be much better to stand up and walk through that door? Wouldn't it be much better to gain an understanding, to really think deeply on these things? To be much more mindful about the decisions that we make, what kind of food that we put into our body, what kind of ideas that we put into our brain, what kind of food we sustain ourselves spiritually. And when we choose to select only the best, only the highest, only the good, then we get the best product. We get the best result in terms of consciousness and in terms of health and in terms of positive effect on the society at large. So we must turn away from the darkness into the light. And this happens individually with each one of us. When we start to turn our mind towards God, a great battle ensues. And the old habits rise up in order to try to challenge the light that is coming in. And it's not an easy thing. And really, the great scriptures are referring to this, the battles that occur between one army and another, between one people and another. They may have some historical fact, but there's a greater truth that is being articulated through these stories, and that is that it is our story, our individual story, the battles that we go through, in order to move from purely human consciousness into divine awareness, divine consciousness. Master was wonderful at articulating this from the standpoint of the scriptures, from both the Bhagavad Gita as well as the Christian scriptures. And here we read about Master's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. I'm reading here from his original magazine from Mother's Library. This magazine was printed in January of 1933. A kind of fun note is at the back of it. It has an advertisement, and it's a special trial and gift offer. East-West Magazine, 6 months for $1. So this is entitled The Soul's Secret, Interpretation of the Bhagavad Gita, The Battle Between Discrimination and Material Desire, and it takes place based on the first chapter, second stanza. And this is a spiritual interpretation of this stanza. Introspection, which is represented by Sanjay, who is telling the story, actually, of the Bhagavad Gita. He is the one who is interpreting all of these events for the king about what his son, Duryodhana, and his nephews, the Pandavas, are doing. And so Sanjaya, Master interprets here as introspection. Further revealed, after having seen the armies of discriminative qualities, or those good Pandavas, in array for psychological battle, ready to fight the sense tendencies, King Material Desire, that is Duryodhana, the son of the material king, went to consult his preceptor, that is Drona. Habit and deep thought, the following, and this is the elaborate spiritual interpretation. The first stanzas describe the preparation for a psychological battle between the forces of discrimination and the blind mental tendencies as revealed by introspection. The second stanza goes on to depict how the ordinary individual, where the sense Bolsheviks rule, or those dictatorial senses rule, introspection and discrimination, being prisoners of the sense armies, are forced to be silent. But as soon as the spiritual aspirant introspects and tries to rouse and train his soldiers of discrimination by meditation, immediately material desire, king of all sense tendencies, afraid of losing the kingdom of the soul and body, tries to reinforce himself by consulting his preceptor of past habit. In other words, when we turn our mind within, the old tendencies of the habit, if we have a lot of anxiety, a lot of fears, a lot of sense tendencies, a lot of desires for this world, immediately the habit begins to draw itself back up. It seems like the more we try to turn the mind within towards those good tendencies, the more the bad, the negative tendencies tries to draw the mind out. And this is the battleground that we're on. Material desire reigns supreme in the person who does not meditate. Material desire is the king of all sense tendencies because it is desire which lures discrimination to follow the sense pleasures of idleness, bodily comfort, and so forth, instead of following soul happiness, which consists in all-around peace of mind. As soon as meditation awakens discriminative qualities, King Material Desire becomes extremely afraid of losing his hold in the kingdom of life and tries to reinforce himself by recalling the pleasures of past evil habits. I remember there was a time when I was moving into a deeper state of meditation, and you can always tell when you're about ready to enter into a deeper state. Because as soon as you try to go into a deeper state, those past tendencies get stronger instead of lesser. And I remember there was a time when I'd sit down to meditate, and I was perfectly awake and ready to meditate. And as soon as I'd sit down to meditate, the first thing I'd want to do is just go to sleep. The tendency was so strong, it just would take me over. And the minute I thought about getting up and moving from meditation, the desire for sleep would leave me. And it just proved to me that this was a negative tendency that was coming to me. It was a past habit desire. I was literally trying to put myself to sleep rather than wake up in meditation. There are other times that a fear will take over and an anxiety will take over. And you'll feel like being anywhere except trying to sit down and meditate. You'll want to do anything. You'll find any excuse not to do it. And so during these times, really focus on the idea, this is not just me being a terrible person. This is really me being on the battlefield. This is a negative tendency drawing itself up to interrupt my going deeper within. Sometimes the idea will come, oh, this is boring sitting here. And that too is a negative tendency, a past habit that's rising up. When you plug yourself into the source of all life, you're not going to be bored, I can assure you. The yogis who sit on their meditation blankets or in a cave someplace are far from bored. Those ones who are really communing with God are filled with life energy, are filled with vitality, are filled with a flow of divine thought that is beyond anything that you can conceive of in the human sense. There are those people of brilliant mind and not so brilliant mind who always try to figure everything out with their head. They always try to figure it out through logic, and this has a certain efficacy in the world, of course. But when it comes to deeper meditation, it's of little or no value at all. In fact, it becomes an obstacle as you try to go deeper. And I know those individuals who are trying to figure things out with their brain, with their mental cognitive faculties, which have served them very, very well in other arenas in life. But it actually makes for very convoluted kinds of ideas when they are not able to focus their mind deeper because the mind is just running and running and running. They're trying to evaluate and think everything out. And this becomes the obstacle to sinking deeper into meditation. Now, it is not that you become a non-thinking person in the sense that you just believe whatever is told to you or that you go down any path or any route. You're very disciplined in your thought, but your thought is being brought down to the point where it becomes not thought any longer, but conscious awareness. And when you come into that pure state of conscious awareness, you are now in the sat state, or the pure state of being. You are in a pure state of stillness. And yet you have never felt yourself to be more alive than in that state of stillness. It is not boring, I assure you. And it is not a place to just switch yourself off or to die or become a nothing. It's nothing of the sort. You become more. You expand past the little bubble of individuality that before has kept you confined. And now you expand out into a more universal sphere of consciousness. Now, it's not that you go outside of yourself, but rather yourself becomes enlarged. You feel yourself to be a part of everything. Comedians love to make fun of being one with everything, and it is quite funny oftentimes when they make references in this way. And it's because it is the human mind trying to imagine what it's like to be one with everything. And it's just not possible. It's not possible. But you cannot deride or minimalize the experience itself as when you feel your consciousness merge into the all consciousness. You feel yourself, as Master talked about, to be a part of the blades of grass that people walk upon. You are the person who is walking upon the grass. You are the you're the limbs that rise up and wave in the breeze. You're also the roots that sink themselves down. Now, this is just not simply a product of your imagination. You feel the truth of it. You feel the reality of it. And you feel more truth, more reality in this experience than you do in waking up to the five senses. And to have this universal vision is entering into this true monotheism. It is a true monotheistic. It is not just that a proclaiming that my God is the only God or the right God. It is that God is truly one. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. The Lord is one singular cause. Everything that is has come from that singular cause. There is nothing that can exist that's separate from it. Even as the branch cannot exist separately from the tree, once you separate the limb from the tree, it soon dies. It can carry on a life for a while, but it begins to dissipate and then withers and completely dies. You cannot exist separate from the tree. And how much more this is true from your individual soul. You are constantly being fed by divine source. The life that you have that gives you the ability to walk, to talk, to think, is constantly being fed into your system. In the Holy Science that Sri Yukteswar wrote in English, it was changed by an editor at one time to read that God created versus what Sri Yukteswar referred to as God creates, thinking that they are improving upon the Master's language. But they were not. It can be true to be said that God created in past tense. But it's more true to say that God creates. God creates you from moment to moment. And if you could see your reality as it really is, you would see that God is constantly supplying you with life force. It comes from behind you through the medulla. It comes from behind you through the spine. And if you can sense it, if you can open yourself to it, and sense the flow of life force coming into your system, just open your mind to it with your internal mind. And you may be aware that you actually, through preoccupations of the mind, you're closed off to it largely. Although you cannot completely close yourself off, or you could not be living at all. But you can also open yourself more to it. You can open, and from behind you, you open that flow. You feel that flow come into your spine and into your brain with a greater sense. It comes in with peace. It comes in with calm. It comes in with power. It comes in with intelligence. And you can send and direct that life force to any particular part of your body. If you're having difficulty, if you're having a great deal of pain, or you're having some inharmony, unbalance, perhaps you're carrying a great deal of tension in your shoulders, your neck, your back. Open that area to the flow of life energy coming in directly from the source. It comes in as a healing, living waters, so to speak, as Jesus described it. He described it both as living waters and as food. I have food which you know not of, that he described to the disciples. And this is the food. This is the living waters. And you let those living waters come into you, and they begin to saturate into your cells. They've been starved of this living water many times because you closed yourself off to it. It comes in through the medulla into the brain as a cool, calm thought. Not racing thoughts and not objectionable thoughts, but as a calm flow of thoughts coming into your mind, an awareness, an openness. And as it fills up all your body cells with health, with vitality, with light, then it begins to expand out between beyond your own body into the aura, your electrical field around you. And that auric field begins to glow and to glisten with this divine light and energy. You can feel it, and with your internal vision, you can see it. You can hear it, as the Om that comes in through the medulla. And you feel yourself vitalized and recharged. Now, if you use your meditation time to open yourself in this way, you will not be bored and you will not be distracted. You will feel this life force growing in you, recharging you, rejuvenating you, renewing you. This is a true internal baptism. This is a baptism of light. It is a baptism with living waters. And you will feel purified and refreshed and enlivened through this. And that light will continue to go out and expand. And in the room and in your home, it will begin to purify the vibrations all around you. It will begin to change the consciousness of people who are around you. And as that continues to grow, it will go out through your neighborhood and your community. And it will go out as a cool, calming, sattvic flow that will deliver light into this world. You become a source of prosperity, a source of virtue, a source of upliftment. And all you can say without lifting a finger, you don't have to move physically, but you're being now a conduit for this divine light and life. This is putting yourself into harmony with the true one God. And that every individual has access, by whatever name they may call it, to this same divine consciousness and source. We can both call it by a name and know that in truth it is also nameless, because it is beyond all names. And yet it says that the name of God and God are one. And that is because the name of God is this vibration that you hear coming in through the medulla. You have a built-in pyramid of sorts that comes, one point is at the medulla, the other point is at the ajna. And at the ajna is the purusha, that is the divine light of intelligence. And that is why you see the light at the ajna. At the medulla is ananda, is the blissful flow of the name of God. And that is the same, that is the sound or the name of God that comes in at the medulla. And the top point of the pyramid is at the top of the head. And when you, as I am right now, feeling these forces and seeing these forces within me, and at the top of the head, you feel the cells of your brain being activated. There's a tingling life force at the top, a part of the brain that is normally not activated. And from this point, at the top of the head, you feel a calm stillness and an expansiveness. It expands out into all space. And this is the top point of the pyramid. So you have a pyramid that is right within you. And it is all pointing up towards omnipresence, omnipotence, and omniscience. These are your birthright. And this is what you experience as you go into the deeper realms of meditation. The master here is describing, as we try to turn the mind inwards and what we experience when that comes. So King Material Desire by himself is easily overcome by an act of judgment. But material desire that has ripened into habit is hard to eject by discrimination. So in other words, when you're just having a desire, if you nip it off in the bud, so to speak, you don't give in to it, and you don't create a habit out of it, it's easily changed. The course is changed. If you're just trying something and you kind of like it, but you know that it's not the best or the highest for you, and you change that habit right now, you decide. As Master described, when he first came to America, he had never drank coffee. But through socializing with people and being invited out, he was drinking coffee. And then one day he was eating out by himself and he found himself ordering coffee. And he had a desire for it. And he talked to himself and he said, "Now listen, you can hear this desire inside of you. Cut it off right now." And he did, and he didn't order the coffee. So if we get the proverbial snowball when it's up at the top of the hill, it's pretty easy to change its course. But if you wait till it's the size of a house down at the bottom of the hill, rolling down with all that inertia, you can stand in front of it, but it'll just run you over. And you'll just become a little spot on the in the snow where it's run you over at. It's very difficult to control them. So if we guide our lives by wisdom, we observe what other people do. We observe the lives of others through reading about them, by seeing what other people do. And we can learn by inference in this way of what works, what lifts us up, and what detracts. I remember having a mentor when I was young. It was a Boy Scout master who I had great love for. And because of his positive habits that he instilled in me about thinking, about observing, about appreciating nature, those are things that he awakened or helped to awaken inside of me. But I've retained them. And through retaining them, I retain a little bit of him and the qualities that he brought to me. So we can learn from everyone who's around us, either by positive example of what to do or negative example of what not to do. And instead of finding fault and criticism with people that we find have objectionable habits, if we use it rather as a point of instruction and say, listen, here's this person with this rather unlovely habit and way that they present themselves. And let this be an impression upon me of the negative results that occur because of the way this person is. Let me serve it as a reminder for me not to act that way, for me not to do that way. And you see, instead of giving all the power out to that individual, you are now turning it within yourself to correct yourself. I remember there was times when Mother was telling me about things, and I thought, well, I really don't think that applies to me, what she is talking to me. Well, sure enough, somewhere down the road, what she was telling me about at that time applied to me very much. And I could really value what she had been telling me a long time before. And I realized that she was speaking to a deeper tendency inside of me. There's a part of me tried to push it away. Well, that doesn't apply to me. That's not what I think. That's not what I do. But here in the future, I found myself being tempted with that very thing that she had been telling me about. And that she had given me a template in order to deal with that, in order to make it into a positive experience. And so when you look at this world and you accept the instruction that it gives to you, and you accept it as information that you can gain value with, whether it's positive or negative by how we evaluate things, then we can make use of every single thing that comes to us. According to the historical story, Drona was the preceptor who had taught archery to the wicked Kurus and to the good Pandus. But during the battle between the two parties, he sided with the Kurus. Drona represents intelligence, that's the teacher, influenced by past good or bad actions. The good discriminative tendencies, or Pandus, and the wicked mental tendencies, or Kurus, both learn the art of wielding the piercing power of good or evil during a psychological battle. But as a bird cannot focus the vision of both its eyes on the same object at the same time, but has to see with one eye at a time, so intelligence born of habits, or Drona, unless purified by wisdom, usually follows Duryodhana, or king material desire. We all have good and bad habits inside of us. But if left onto automatic drive, we tend to follow the negative habits unless we correct ourselves. We have to be awake. We have to be alert always to the negative tendencies that will draw the mind down. And at first it can seem like a not very important decision. We just feel a little desire to draw ourselves into the negative. And we might even know that it is the negative, but we think that it's rather harmless, or it has a familiar feeling to it, and so we go down there. It may be a mood. It may be a mood of negativity. It may be a mood of feeling a little down, a little depressed. And we think, well, you know, it's not a big deal. And we just find ourselves kind of blindly going down that path. What we don't know is that we descend down and down and down. And now when we try to pull ourselves back up out of that valley, it's very difficult. And we don't realize, really, how strong a habit is until we try to change it. I know that through my own experience that there were tendencies and habits that I had. I thought, oh, well, that's not a very strong one. You know, I could give that up anytime I want to until I go to do it. And then I find out that it really has strong roots inside of me. That desire nature really is in there. And it begins to fight for its life, and it's not easy. It's not nearly as easy as I made it out to be when I wanted to change that pattern. There are those from the New Age thought that says, well, there's really no such thing as karma. You just create a certain reality, and when you want to change that reality, you just change your thought. Well, if you have a powerful enough intellect, you can do this. But for most of us, we're drawn along in these old tendencies, and we go to change that fact, it doesn't change. That reality doesn't change. There's an investment of energy from action after action after action in that negative way, and now that charge is really powerful inside of us. We can accept the idea there is one God and a universal vision. But just look what happens when you walk outside and you get into your car and you're driving away. And then suddenly somebody cuts you off and you're just enraged or you're very fearful. Suddenly you're just taken up with this idea. You're no longer in the universal vision. Or somebody says the wrong thing to you or you don't get a particular desire fulfilled that you wanted. And all of a sudden you're at odds. You're in that duality. There's a vast difference between intellectually accepting an idea. That's a beginning. But it's by no means the end. That is why I speak on these things time and again, is because it has to be taken more deeply into the unconscious mind. It has to be integrated down through all the different layers. You have to be able to take this deeper and deeper and deeper until your entire being is purified, body, mind, soul. And unless you're doing the work, you're not really making progress. You can pay lip service to it, but you've got to do the work. You've got to keep your mind on God always. You've got to work through these material desires. You've got to come out on the other side of them. You've got to break their lock that they have on you. And unless you're willing to take on that battle, then better for you to step off onto the sidelines and do something that's constructive to the world, to whatever degree that you can. But you can't truly call yourself a spiritual aspirant and not be making the effort. It's true that it is God's grace by which we attain these things. And it is even true that it is God's grace by which we aspire. But it requires our cooperation. Because God will not go against our own free will. Unless we willingly turn ourselves over, and not just once. It's not going down to the altar and they say, I accept Jesus Christ into my life as my Lord and Savior. That won't do it. That's the beginning. But then you have to live the life. You have to really learn to accept. You have to receive that Christ intelligence into you. And let it purify you until there is nothing else but that light, that life, that bliss, that joy, that wisdom that permeates you through and through. Now, lest any of you think that, well, that can be fine for somebody else. It's too much for me. It's not too much for you. Because you, of course, you can't do it by yourself. It is that grace, it is that supreme power and intelligence of God that will come in and will change you. But you must be receptive to it, and you must be willing to do what it takes to become receptive. To get the ground ready, so to speak, for those seeds to be sowed, to keep the weeds from overcoming whatever has been sown deep into the ground by pulling those weeds of negative past habit and thought. And then gradually, your eyes, your vision are purified. You begin to see that it is truly an all-pervading presence that is everywhere about you, that is within you, that is behind everything that exists. And it's not just a thought, but it's an experience. You feel it. You know it. And you know it down from the depths of your own being. And you feel bliss. You feel freedom. You feel joy. There's a writing at the beginning of the magazine called Communion by James Warnick. He's contributed a lot of articles at this time. We stayed on a beach all night. It was not cold, but for the joy of it, we built a driftwood fire and then wrapped our blankets around us and lay down to rest. The waves began whispering to me. The soft winds caressed me, and the stars smiled their glory upon me. But I would not be tempted, and I said to my mind, O mind, all day you have played with me, laughed at me, tricked me, stung me, scared me, and scorned me, and now you must give me a rest. I shall chain you outside the temple of silence and enter alone to commune with the spirit of life. And so, with unshod feet and uncovered head, I passed into the temple and knelt at the pearly altar. I saw no face, but I heard a voice that was the essence of music, and the voice said, Beloved, I knew you would come to me. Though your friends should forget you, though your body should die, though the sea should disappear, though the earth should dissolve and the stars melt in the blue, yet I, who speak all things into being, would remain in my primitive splendor, and you, who have been with me always, would be with me still. And my heart sang, and I closed my eyes and slept. Isn't that beautiful? This interior life is really something. It is the source of all life, all intelligence, all beauty, all splendor. But who believes it? Who believes it enough to really investigate it? To really get to know it? To pay the price to go down through these different obstacles that we face in getting there? And remember, there is no one else but yourself who have placed these obstacles before you. You've programmed yourself with the cooperation of this world, but you chose this world. We all did. And we have to unchoose it. We have to make that choice. Even as he's looking up into the stars and seeing the beauty and seeing the wonders outside of himself, still he directed his mind and intelligence and awareness within. And look what he got as a result. This inner divine communion. Seek out God, and the lotus of your brain will blossom and receive the rays of sun that come from the divine. And you will be illumined. And you will know that God is one. God is one. And there is no other God. Not in any narrow sectarian sense, but in truth and in reality. God is one. And your heart shall sing. And your soul will dance. And you will melt into omnipresence. Will you please pray with me, O Heavenly Father. Divine Mother. I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet. And surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with thee.
Of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
God's bliss ever lift you up. May his grace ever protect you. Be it so.